Chad Hinson, VP of Levi's Global Brand Creative Team. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Awesome to be here.
Chad, we've met before and worked together, but it is rarer than unicorns that you talk publicly about yourself or your work. I'm thrilled that you said yes to this. I cannot wait to get cracking. So to kick things off, I'm going to explain how the show works.
Perfect.
In my hand, I have a deck of 50 cards. Each card contains one question designed to reveal how you've navigated your creative experience so far, and in turn, share insights that our listeners can take into their own creative lives. This show is absolutely about passing it on. So I'm going to ask you to select 10 of these cards. Neither of us will know what they are until I've turned them over. But first, I need to shuffle the deck. And whilst I do this, allow me to introduce you to our listeners. You ready?
Yeah, sounds great.
Amazing. Chad, you are the VP of the Levi's Global Brand Creative Team, one of the key creative caretakers of an iconic brand that is over 160 years old. From the big ideas through to the tiniest of details, I don't believe it would be an exaggeration to say that there isn't a single aspect of how any of us anywhere in the world experience the brand that hasn't been shaped by you or your team in some way. From creating global marketing campaigns to developing unique experiences, you're the one leading the charge on how Levi's tells its story. You're based in San Francisco, but you grew up in Grapevine, a small town in northern Texas where you volunteered at your mother's interior design business. And at age 10, you started making mood and materials boards for her to take to client appointments.
Yeah. I knew right before lunch, when the principal would come into the office and ask for me, if I wasn't in trouble, which I usually wasn't, it was because my mom was there to pick me up to take me to an appointment for her clients.
Amazing. What a start. And it was basically, it was through this experience that you discovered the thing that would go on to fuel your creative energy to this very day, that magic and freedom of being able to create something out of nothing. In your words, a 3-yard piece of muslin fabric equals endless possibility. And all of this before you were legally able to drive. You did briefly consider a career in architecture, but too much maths and the 8 years of study was not your jam. Instead, you opted for a degree in fashion design at the University of Texas at Austin before running into a small yet significant pickle. You love fashion, but hated sewing.
Oh, and I was so bad at it.
Well, brings me on to another detail, which you must have redeemed yourself, because is it right that you made your wife's wedding dress?
I did, yeah. Somewhat out of necessity, because we were super poor. But also, she couldn't find a dress that she liked. So she described the type of dress she wanted, and I went and found old and archival patterns and just sketched and put it all together. It was also added a lot of stress to the wedding buildup, as you can imagine, because about a week prior, it was still in muslin. So it was intense.
Down to the wire. And that
always,
is love always personified.
Yeah, it was amazing. It's a wonderful story, but it also is very indicative of my process, to be honest.
Well, arguably, it was at this pivotal point that you brought together your love of culture, music, architecture, and art and channeled it into the beginning of a career that has seen you working with some of the top global retailers in a variety of capacities, ranging from creative direction, 3D installation, marketing, store design, styling, right through to art curation, music development, and so much more. And when I say love of culture, I'm not doing it justice. Obsessive might be more appropriate. Dear listener, check out these stats. Chad has more than 8,000 records in his vinyl collection, 300 pairs of sneakers. Do you have a favorite brand?
Adidas. Yeah, that's my obsession.
And you've also got 100 pairs of 501s in your wardrobe.
At least.
Wow. Okay. So one more, if I may say, slightly inexplicable detail. You're also an avid soccer fan who follows both Newcastle United FC and Glasgow Celtic.
That is correct.
You've collaborated with the likes of Jim Goldberg, Jeanette Beckman, Say Adams, and Bebeto Garcia, to name a few. That is a 360 rock and roll resume, and I've got a feeling we're going to have an excellent time. Welcome to the Creative Blood Experience.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited to be here with everyone.
Well, I have a question for you to kick things off. Not one of the questions, but I'd love to know more about the young Chad, because he sounds really fun.
Because the old one isn't. Is that what you're saying?
No, not at all. It's more just like you were exposed to so much at such a young age. Your mind must have been absolutely buzzing.
Right.
What was that like?
Yeah, it was interesting. My folks owned their own residential lighting and decorating business, carpet and vinyl and light fixtures, the whole thing. And so, you know, from a very early age, I spent time at their store. My dad ran the business portion of it, a very critical, analytical thinker. And my mom ran the creative side of it, so all the design bits. So the exposure to both sides has really informed me as a creative, for sure. But, you know, just like we were talking about, the night before my mom going to a client, having a black Gator board and all these samples and just starting to pull them together and seeing how mixed fabrications and elements, how they could come together, how color looked, and just taking in the whole ecosystem of what the design intent was about. I was doing that at 10 years old. So I think that exposure, also exposure to such a wide variety of people, from the client themselves to a general contractor, was very influential for sure, and is something that's still very important to what I do today.
Absolutely incredible. I also share that my dad had his own business. He had an estate agency in East London, actually, Dalston of all places, back in the day. And it really also informed my approach and my understanding and also sensitivity potentially to the ecosystem of dreaming something, making it happen, and all of the roller coaster that happens in the in-between. So that exposure is a gift, you know. It's little heads up that, you know, there's sort of bumps along the way. I think it's just really sort of fascinating.
Especially when you're working with clients, right? Who are, especially when it comes to their house, they're incredibly opinionated, incredibly passionate. You know, there's an amazing dialogue that happens of you and maybe not me as a 10-year-old, but definitely me later, being able to articulate a vision and being able to have those conversations really early on absolutely prepares you for doing this for a living, you know, as you grow up. Absolutely.
Well, I've got the cards in front of me. Before you pick, I should let you know that in the deck, there's a dealer's choice card, which means I get to ask you a question specific to you. And there are two wild cards. They're slightly punchier questions. How do you want to do this?
Just flip through and I'll tell you to stop. Stop.
Okay. Yep. One.
Stop.
Okay.
Stop.
Four. Yep.
Good?
Yep.
Yeah, that's good.
Nine.
Yeah. Stop.
Ten.
Stop. Perfect.
You're done.
I'm done.
You picked some good ones. Bang on.
Oh, nice. Nice. Be gentle.
I will. Don't you worry. I won't go in for a banger from the beginning, or will I? Okay. Actually, I'm going to.
Oh,
you know why?
No.
Because I know you can handle it.
All right.
Question number one.
Yep.
If you could whisper a piece of advice to your younger self, what would you say? You don't have to actually whisper for the drama.
I won't whisper. Let's see. Probably to self-advocate, I think, as a creative. So much of the process is selling in the idea, right? Selling in a great idea. And I think that the key is to make sure that you can articulately communicate a vision. So I think it's to have conviction to go out there and sell your idea with confidence and believe in yourself. That's massive.
Can I ask you to elaborate on what happens in a scenario where you don't advocate for yourself?
I think you run the risk of putting out subpar work if you're not careful. I think the goal, especially in a commercial aspect of where my career has been, you know, there's always collaboration. There's always back and forth with whoever it is that's briefing you on the project. But I think the key is if you can't sell the idea, if you can't really be able to present in a confident way what you're all about, what this idea or concept is all about, you run the risk of not being able to execute against that vision. And I think when that idea gets too watered down or muddled or even lost in the mix, you're not putting out the best content or the best creative you can.
I agree. 1,000,000%. We've all been in scenarios where someone has not been able to necessarily articulate themselves. You feel like something could have happened if they had have been able to, potentially. It's just that moment was almost lost, because you only get a moment, don't you? You don't get a second shot.
If they're not convinced that you have the vision, you run the risk of them losing trust or faith in you being able to execute. That's clearly the biggest thing you want to avoid. You want people on board from the jump and just as excited as you are about what you're going to create.
Yep. Perfect. So question number two, what is the one lesson that you keep having to learn on repeat?
I'd say this is kind of a build on what we were just talking about, but I think as a creative, we are always in sell-in mode. And, you know, it's not the funnest part by any means of what we do, but what you might take for granted, especially working really closely with people, and I'm lucky enough, I work with a wonderful team and cross-functional teams, where you build this kind of familial thing, you know, that happens. And sometimes you take for granted, oh, they get it. They know what I'm talking about or whatever. And you forget to reestablish that vision, that notion, that big idea. The other thing I would say is it is never personal. Bad feedback, good feedback, constructive feedback, it's not personal. It stings, yeah. Right? As a creative, you're pouring everything you have, mental, physical, spiritual, in a lot of cases, you're pouring everything you have into these projects. And the feedback sometimes is tough to hear. I think if you just keep reminding yourself, the spirit of the feedback is always in the right space. And yeah, it's not personal. It's not an attack on you. Hopefully it's in that spirit of collaboration and making an idea better, because an idea can always get better.
It's so not personal, but it always feels it every time. It, from the heart.
It does. Yeah. It does. It, yeah.
Okay. Question number three. What are some strategies that you use for staying inspired and nurturing your creativity?
I would say, but probably surrounding yourself with creative people, right? Making sure you've got folks around you, not only who are helping you innovate and things like that, but are also there to be critical and honest with you, right? Because you want that feedback and you want to be able to challenge yourself. So I think that's a big part of it, is just making sure you're, you know, really challenging your ideas.
Also, just elaborating on that slightly about surrounding yourself with people, I also think it's really important around taste level, if you're sort of aspiring for a, sort of a vision or an idea, and it's not everything for everyone. So it's how do you curate the teams or environment and help sort of keep that moving and keep that momentum? Because we not only need to feed others, but we also need to be fed ourselves.
Right. Right. Yeah. I say this and I mean it totally sincerely. I think great ideas come from everywhere. Right. So I think the diversity is critical. But yeah, I think keeping that group tight, first of all, because I mean, you've seen, I'm sure, big creative meetings that go way off track because we're all like, ooh, something shiny. So I think it's keeping it tight. But absolutely, I think being open to ideas coming from everywhere and inspiration coming from everywhere absolutely is critical.
Sort of outside the work environment, is there something that's important to you to do in order to be able to still dream?
Yeah, for sure. You know this about me. I am inspired by so many things, music being probably one of the biggest things, and just architecture and art in general. And I think it's how you channel all that inspiration, because it can be very haphazard as well where the ideas come from. But it's also why I'll show you this journal that I have with me that I keep with me anytime, anywhere. If you were to bump into me on the street, I'd have this thing with me. I try to document things that get me excited. But I love this idea of style too, not necessarily fashion, right? So I think this notion of how people curate themselves is wonderful. And I love what's happening with Gen Z right now. But also I live in the Haight-Ashbury district of San Francisco. So you will see self-curation in every type of scenario, which again, I love.
It makes perfect sense. You know, what people not only look like, but also what they're giving off. That's also hugely inspiring on a very human-centric level.
Yeah. You know, we were just talking about being able to sell this creative ideas, the confidence you have in the idea. That's the same way with pouring your heart out when you make a song or a piece of art on canvas or whatever that might look like. And the same thing, putting this amazing look together, or outfit together, or whatever. It's that confidence is how people pull things off. It might be ridiculous, but the fact that they're wearing it with the best attitude and in the world, you buy into it. You're like, I'm down. I like it. It works.
We've got to love self-expression. I'm all for it. Each to their own. Okay, get ready for this one.
I'm ready.
You're working with an icon in their field and a personal hero, but they're giving you only 20% of what you know they're capable of. How would you approach getting them to give you 100, or let's call it 150%?
Yeah. That's a great question. I'm lucky enough that I've never been in that scenario. And I tell you that with all honesty. But in that situation, I think it's all about communication, right? Yeah. At the end of the day, you've decided to work with this person for a reason, whether you know they are your idol or not, it doesn't matter. But you're working with somebody for a reason. For me, it's typically because there's some shared values in what we're doing together, or there's this authentic storytelling, you know? So I think it's really helping that person understand why you're here to begin with, right? And again, it's about sharing a vision. But I think if you can get that person to realize this is in everybody's interest, that this is the best thing that we can do together, it's also kind of, all right, put myself in their shoes. I don't know what they did last night. I don't know what they're going through right now. So how do you empathize a bit with who you're working with, who you're talking to, and bring out the best in everyone? And I mean, you've been with me on set, Laura. That's literally, I hope if nothing else, I'm the vibe check on set, because that's so important to me. Not only that people are enjoying themselves, but that it's fun, that what we do should be fun. That doesn't mean it comes without stress, but that time when you're on set, that's when the magic should be happening. And I think being able to create that mood is everything. So I think, yeah, just communication and really talking to people and trying to bring out the best in them.
I mean, I can 1,000,000% confirm that you exude that energy. Genuinely, it's a rare human that can do that consistently.
I think the biggest compliment is people have done their bit. They're on set for 2 hours and we're finished with their part of it. And 4 hours later, they're still hanging on set, walking around. They're going, now I want to be with you guys. I love that. Yeah, I love that.
Totally. Obviously, we're not talking about the crew. It's making me smile because I'm thinking, I want to be on that shoot.
Fair.
So question number 5, yep. Do you have any rituals or superstitions associated with your work or creative practice? Come on.
I'm going to say honestly that I don't, right? I don't. But I think—
Not like lucky socks or like lucky pants or something.
No, but let me say something. And again, it'll be 100% informed by being from Texas. I eat like a toddler.
Okay.
I need comfort food when I'm on set. So always, I think you suffered through this with me. Producers that I work with or whatever, they're like, what is it, Chad? Is it chicken? Is it a roast beef sandwich? Is it? And I hate being high maintenance. And I'd say that's probably the one place where I'm high maintenance. So I don't know if that's a ritual, but it is literally something I need when I'm on set. And it's embarrassing.
If that's what you need to do what you do, my God, it's not like, you know, green M&Ms or anything.
Oh, that will not be me.
So that brings me nicely, I think, onto this next card that you've picked, which is a quick fire round.
Oh, no.
Yes. So if you wouldn't mind, please can I ask you to finish these sentences in as few words as possible?
Sure.
My process is?
Collaborative.
When I'm stuck, I
simplify.
A project is done when?
Never.
Perfect. The one thing I'll never make is
anything inauthentic.
It's perfect. It's perfect.
all of those need about 30 more minutes talking about, but that's my quick fire.
I love the punchiness of the questions, but also the answers, because it really forces us to just say it how it is, you know?
That idea of simplification when you're stuck, though, has been something that was a really good learning for me probably midway through my career, mainly because if you're stuck, it's probably because you're overthinking it. So it's getting back to the root of what you're trying to solve, what you're trying to create, and really picking out all the stuff that's complicating it and simplifying, going back usually to that original idea.
Yeah. I think it's a very underrated simplifying thing.
It's also when is a project done? Never. Because as creatives, we will overwork it to death, you know, and early on is probably the best part of what you've made, what you've created. At least it's the most honest part, right? And I think that's usually what you're trying to solve for.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, next question, nice. Is question number 7. You're bashing through these. Who or what is your sounding board and why?
Yeah, I would have to say it's my team. And making sure you're surrounding yourself with people who will be honest with you is critical. You need those people that are just super honest with you. And you'll hear musicians talk about it all the time. They'll play a song for somebody and they're like, that's amazing. And they're like, no, it's crap. I know it is. I'm just trying to build on it and make it better. And I think that's the same. The sounding board has to be, of course, friends and family and personal life. But I think in the creative space and in my career, it's definitely having brilliant people around you.
Amazing. So my next question is, what are you like to work with?
You know what? I would say collaborative, but decisive. And that's always been an interesting dynamic in my career. And depending on where you work, you take a lot of these aptitude tests, and this is the type of person you are, and this is the type of thinker you are, and all this type of stuff. And throughout my career, and again, we talked a little bit about my mom and dad, I've always been this really interesting balance between an analytical, critical thinker and a creative. And it's actually served me quite well, being willing to work with anyone and everyone to make something great. But also there's a moment where you got to be like, let's move forward. Let's do this, you know, because again, as creatives, we can live in this ideation space for a really long time, but you've got to execute, you've got to get things out into the world. So I think it is, hopefully it's that balance of super collaborative, but when it's time to go, it's time to go.
Say no more. I think it's such a gift when you can bring that together to have vision, but also then take people on a journey and be able to, you know, very much lead the charge.
Yeah. And you and I have talked about this before. It is such a beautiful blessing, right? To be able to sit with a bunch of creative folks and dream and ideate. And you should be building that. Even folks that aren't in creative fields, you should be building that time into your life, right? Because if nothing else, it's recharging. But I think if you can't articulate it or execute it, it's kind of all for naught. I am not a fine artist. What I do is creative and I think very artful, but it's not fine art. Do you know what I mean? It's for the purpose of telling these great stories and inspiring people to fall in love with whatever brand it might be. Do you know what I mean? So I think that is that key of having that creative perspective and being able to articulate it into a commercial vision as well.
Well, there's another gift you had for me. You picked a dealer's choice.
Ah, I didn't pick that. You're cheating because you're in London and I'm in San Francisco.
Listen, this is perfectly above board here.
Right.
I was hoping, but I wasn't sure if I'd have the opportunity. So here's your dealer's choice. Remember, it's something that is very specific to you.
Yep.
So I noticed on LinkedIn in a testimonial from someone, somebody that you'd worked with said that they were struck by the way that you championed smart risks. And I adore that. And it speaks to me beyond words. And I think it's very, very poignant and relevant for the moment that we're in relation to creativity. So I wanted to ask you, what is your creative relationship with risk? And what do you mean by smart risk?
Yeah.
And also, what's a dumb risk? You can start with a smart risk.
We'll start
with that one first.
I think we've talked before about what makes a good idea or when do you know something works or whatever. And a big part of that for me is, does it make me the tiniest bit uncomfortable? Or is it something that I've never seen before, but it still makes sense with the story I might be trying to tell or the project that I'm working on. I've been lucky that every place that I've worked before has trusted me and empowered me to deliver the look and feel of a brand. What an amazing gift by anyone. And I'll say Levi's is is an incredibly creative, nurturing brand, which is amazing. And I think it's shown throughout our history, right? But I think the trust from the brand to take risks and to be willing to go out on a limb a little bit to do something is everything. And I think a smart risk is, at the end of the day, we're representing this brand. So a smart risk is making sure no matter what happens, it's all in celebration and testament to the longevity and the evolution of the brand. So I think a smart risk is one where, yeah, you might have that little thing in your stomach that's, can we do this? Can we get away with this? And you do it and you push through it. And 90% of the time, if not more, it ends up being something really special. And so I think that's smart risk. I'll say risk within parameters, and maybe that sounds super corny, but I think it's risk where you're very clear with the lines, you know, with the lines you need to stay. You know.
It's also educated, isn't it?
100%. 100%.
It's with everything in consideration.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think dumb risk is one that you don't necessarily believe in, but you're like, yeah, let's give it a try, like as an afterthought. I think that's dumb risk, or one where it actually might put yourself or the company or something in a negative light. Nothing is worth that. Do you know what I mean? At the end of the day, personally and commercially, your reputation is all you've got. You know what I mean? And protecting that with everything you have, I think is
smart.
Yeah, it's your duty. Absolutely.
What's an example of a risk that you've taken at Levi's, a smart risk?
Not necessarily my call, but a big risk that we did as a company, which was this Buy Better, Wear Longer campaign, which was all about sustainability and all that stuff. That was a big risk. We opened ourselves up for the first time in a big way for people to poke holes in the idea. Do you know what I mean? That was a massive risk that I think paid off from the standpoint of awareness.
Yeah. Okay. Here is our 10th and final question.
All right.
It's sort of a biggie, and I wanted to end with it when I saw it as one of the 10, because I think it's really interesting. What do you see as the biggest challenge facing the industry in the next 5 to 10 years, and how do you plan to address it?
Mm.
You and your team. Yeah. So it's not necessarily, you know, it's not all on you. That feels too big.
Yeah, it's crazy because you've heard, whether it be conversations about AI or conversations about there's so much innovation and technology that's unveiling itself to the creative world, apparel, fashion, retail in particular. So I think that's something that's massive right now. I think the immediate thing that we're talking about and that we're faced with is we're now in a cycle of constant content creation. Do you know what I mean? Whether it be through social or e-commerce or television or just out in the world, people are constantly bombarded with messaging. And I think that this idea of always being on your phone, always on and everything, that's relatively new. And I think for me, this idea of how do you do that while still making something that's worthwhile, right? My worst nightmare is digital trash. You know what I mean? You talk about recycling and too much plastic in the world. I happen to think we're on the verge of too much content out in the world. And I think the key, the challenge is going to be how to continue to create content, but valuable, worthwhile content. How do you keep putting good content out into the world that's additive, right? That's making things better, that's contributing to society in some way, whether it's authentic storytelling that you're doing, how you create the work. It's so important. And that's just a challenge as content continues to grow and grow.
I agree with you. I really feel that things were accelerated during COVID.
Absolutely.
I feel like there was a lot more opportunity to watch, listen, and digest things. But now it's like a tsunami literally, how do we decide what direction we're giving our attention to? And potentially, I was wondering if it was around purpose, is it about values? How do you actually decide what you're going to take in and what you're going to put to the side? Because people have to prioritize their time and they want to be fed, but they want to be fed with things that genuinely connect with them.
Right.
Because they've been so oversaturated.
Yeah. There's this amazing research that we were looking at not too long ago that was talking about what type of content people like, right? Physically, like push the heart button, right? Like versus what people actually share.
Yeah.
And there's two things that people like everything, right? You're just conditioned to push and move on. There's this amazing kind of phenomena of what people are forwarding are either funny, right? Just things that make you smile and laugh, to your point of values or just making you feel better, are things that are really emotional. And I kind of love that. That says a lot about what's happening in the world, right? Is yeah. Oh, wait a minute. I need to share this. And that duality, I think, is very telling of what's happening. But also, I think what's happening with the human condition, right? People want to be there's so many reasons to be discouraged and depressed, and people want to be lit up. They want to be fulfilled and inspired, and I think you see a lot of that there. From a brand standpoint, are suddenly every story going to be rainbows and unicorns? Absolutely not. But I think there's a responsibility to make sure, like I was saying, what you are putting out into the world is positive and additive versus just stuff for the sake of putting out work.
I'm wondering, as you say that, what for you has been a project that feels particularly quote unquote worthwhile to you, you know, looking back over the years?
When we did our 501 campaign a couple seasons ago, not the 150th anniversary, we curated the cast based on the actual relationships that they had with the product. And we always talk about the product, and we'll street cast and cast and people look great and all that stuff. But we cast these folks because of these stories that they had. And a lot of it was generational, passed down from grandpa to dad to me or whatever. But there were some that were just about, oh, I'll tear up. We had someone who was a trans member of the cast who said that the gene that his dad passed on to him helped him define his masculinity and who he was as a person. And that was powerful. We had people who talked about how their families came back and forth from Mexico to the US and using the product as currency because it had such a connection, not only to them, but to the places where they lived. I mean, just this kind of stories that were transcendent of just a gene. You know what I mean? It was, we talk a lot about the cultural relevance that this brand has. And you started off the show, Lara, by saying over 160 years. And we talk about the, you know, this blank canvas for self-expression. It's truly those types of stories where you get all excited for other reasons as to why you work where you do, you know? So I think those stories and those people have been career highlights.
Chad, I'm not sure how to say this without sounding like a complete meatball, but I cannot thank you enough for just being so generous. There's so much that goes on behind the scenes, you know, behind closed doors. And to hear those questions answered from your perspective is a gift and a half. And really, I can't thank you enough. And I typically would end the show by saying, is there anything that you want to plug? But I wondered if your case, it would be more appropriate to ask you if there's anything that you wanted to share with the audience to sort of close it off.
I mean, I think, well, first, thank you so much for having me. This is a blast. I love talking to you. And it's special. And it is rare that I talk about myself, but thank you for a safe platform to do it. I think, you know, from the creative standpoint, I do have this list of things that are reminders to me always. And I have this thing up. I'm not going to show it to you, but I just wanted to say, this is the list of things that I follow that are incredible to me and their life lessons or whatever. And it's never been in any particular order because I keep evolving it, but it is to be able to sell your idea, sell yourself at the end of the day, to tell authentic stories. Authentic is a word that is painfully overused, but I think when you're championing people, it's important to do that, to capture their authentic selves. The team always has to be first. This is one of the reasons why I'm not on a talking circuit or whatever, because my team is the only reason I've been successful. Collaborate and communicate. I think both of those things are so critical. Don't take it personal. We talked about that. Be inspired by feedback. Be inspired by, I'll say criticism, but just be inspired to be better when you get that type of communication. Be true to yourself. Always self-advocate. And the last thing is surround yourself with inspiring people and things. I can't say that enough. Surround yourself with people that make you feel good and that challenge you. And like I said, so lucky to be at a company that does that, to have a team that does that. And one is to always have good music on set. But anyway, that's one for a different time.
Bust out the playlist, always. An excellent playlist. There's nothing like it. Amazing,
exactly.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Honestly,
yeah.
Can't thank you enough, and can't wait for everybody to hear this, really.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you don't miss a single drop of the Creative Blood Experience by subscribing and following the show wherever you listen to your podcasts. And share it with a fellow creative. Let's get these conversations out there and into the ears of those who need to hear them. This show was created in partnership with the brilliant humans here at Creative Blood and Scenery Studios. Thanks for listening.